So something that's really intriguing, that we've been going through this sermon series, knowing Jesus, walking through the Gospel of Luke, and the irony is not lost on me that today, when Robin was going to be up here sharing about Jesus calming the storm and the fear of the disciples, sharing about all the things that happen and plague us in our lives and the way that Jesus speaks into that, that we have a little bit of a storm of our own ongoing.
Right.
And each of us, wherever we are in our life, I know you have that happening too. It's interesting thinking about turbulence on a plane. You're sitting easy, reading through the magazine, right, if they still have them on many of our planes, reading a book that you brought with you, watching a movie, sipping on the Sprite, eating some stale pretzels, or if you're really lucky, one of those heavily oversalted, weirdly dark chocolate styrofoam cookies. You know, yeah, Snap, Crackle, and Pop. So when you're there, you're doing that, chilling, no problem, enjoying, waiting the next hour and a half until you're going to land, and then all of a sudden, it seems like the bottom gives out onto the plane and starts shaking, and maybe you get a little white-knuckled, you start praying. Looking around at people is a fascinating thing during this time. Some are like me, white-knuckle and praying. Others seem really calm, but their eyes are closed and their lips are moving. And you could tell that they're saying prayers. And then there's that one girl, that one guy, who's just still, just as everything is shaking, they're just like nothing is bothering them. They're continuing to try to read their book. Like, they've seen this story 1,000 times. They're not worried about it. But what you do during that time, what I do, is look towards the flight attendants. Because if they look worried, then I'm worried, right? But more often than not, they're continuing down the aisles doing their food service because they've been through this before. They know what to expect. They are not worried. They are the ones you look to that you think you should be in control right now. How are you going to respond in this situation? And we follow suit. We do this in various different times, right? We do it from a very individual, a familial, even a societal level. We look to the people we assume should have the control of the situation, and if they're losing their minds, it doesn't quite inspire confidence. So as we dig into this text this morning, we're going to be in Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 22. But I want us to keep this idea in mind of times when things get a little shaky and rocky, the responses we have to it, and where do we look in response? So Jesus has just been walking, or has been going around, has shared stories with people, parables, had taught many things, had healed people, sat down in the previous chapter in the house of this Pharisee where the woman came and gave this fragrant offering of love, and Jesus offered her forgiveness. And he's doing a lot over here, and then as he often does, he says to his disciples, this is verse 22 of Luke chapter 8. One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked the disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." Now, where he was, Luke calls this a lake. This is the Sea of Galilee, but it's really a glorified lake, size-wise. So he's talking about this. This is often where Jesus and his disciples would cross. Instead of having to walk all the way around on foot, they'd hop in a boat. Many of his followers were fishermen. They were used to these waters. They had fished in them throughout their careers until they came to know this Jesus. This lake itself sits several hundred meters below sea level, and it's not uncommon to have random storms that pop out of nowhere, right? Any meteorologist would tell you better than I would, but you have the high pressure and the low pressure, the cold air, the hot air, whatever perfect storm comes, suddenly a storm can happen in this lake, in the Sea of Galilee. The disciples were not unprepared for it. They had experienced it many times before. And yet, when this storm hit, they were terrified. The water is coming up over the boat, and it says they were in real danger. And meanwhile, Jesus is sleeping. There's times when I read this and I think that Jesus is somewhat apathetic to the plight of his people. Why are you sleeping at a time like this? In one of the versions of this story, they ask him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Here they say, "Master, Master, wake up. We're drowning." And Jesus, seemingly unaffected, but not unpresent, gets up, rebukes the winds and the raging waters, and it all stills. There's something about this fear that is so primal and is so prevalent. It's not new to us today. It wasn't new to them then. This fear goes all the way back to the beginning of everything. When God created, it's not until Genesis chapter 3 that we ever read the word fear. God's original intent, God's original design was not for us to be plagued by fear and worry and anxiety. Once Adam and Eve take that fruit and they eat it, they go and they hide. God comes and he asks, "Where are you?" They come out and they say, "Well, we realized we were naked. We were afraid. And so we hid." Fear wasn't in the beginning with God. Jesus was. And God, in this moment, after the fall is occurring, the judgment is being pronounced on his people moving forward. They're kicked out of this garden. There's a little piece in there where God promises a deliverer. God promises restoration. God promises that things that are upside down being turned right side up in the future. He says that that Eve's offspring will come and crush the head of the snake. And what Jesus did when he came to this earth is he came and he overpowered death itself. Jesus began the process of, we've talked about that, this upside down kingdom. Some will say it's the right side up kingdom. And what we're living in is what's upside down. Look around. Look at our geopolitical context. Look at all of the mess that's happening around the world. Look at all the mess that's happening a couple miles away. Look at all the mess that's happening in our homes, in our workplaces, in our hearts, and in our minds. And Jesus started something way back when to start the process of making everything right. And one day he has said he's going to come back and everything else will be done away with. The tree that they picked the fruit off of, that ate, that led to fear, that led to death, that led to evil, that led to rupture of all of our relationships and all of creation, doesn't show up at the end of our story. In Revelation, there's only one tree, and that tree is the tree of life. Fear will be done away with because we're told God is love. And in that same passage, we're told that there is no fear in love, and perfect love casts out fear. And what God is doing, what Jesus came to do, was to begin this process. And so when the disciples are sitting here and they're faced with fear, it's not new, but it was not the intent. There's a really prominent advice column that began decades ago called Ask Ann Landers. This is something I learned from Robin. I didn't know what Ask Ann Landers was. Yeah, I'm aging myself. I did know Dear Abby, which is apparently an offshoot. But so there were these women that were utilized the pseudonym of Ann Landers. People would send in letters asking for advice of how to deal with stuff. And what we find out, they had at its peak, I think it was over 10,000 letters a week that were coming in. And they were asked, what is the most common thing that people deal with? The most common question people have that they reach out to you for advice on. Without missing a beat, she said, "That's easy. People want to know how to handle fear. We struggle with our fears. We struggle with the unknown, and we struggle with the things that are known and that we fear." We see these stories in the Bible. We see Jesus doing these incredible things, and the disciples respond in fear and amazement, and they say, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." And they know the answer to that story, and I think that's why they're terrified, because they were well aware of other stories throughout the Hebrew Bible of who controls the wind and the waves. They had seen with their own eyes things that God was actively doing in their day, and they were terrified. And we read this story, and I wonder sometimes if we treat God as if his name was I was instead of I am. Well, God did that really cool stuff in Egypt, but. Well, yeah, Jesus came and he did some really cool things with his disciples, but. There's a guy named Charles Duhigg. And you'll see a few things. There's a few of these stories in here. I do want to make sure I gave this disclaimer. Robin was kind enough to share the notes that he had gathered with me. So I'm combining some things together. I want to make sure I give credit where it's due. This is one of the stories he shared with me. Charles Duhigg was he headed up the U.S. Patent Office at the tail end of the 19th century when it turned into the 20th century. End of the 1800s, into the 1900s. And it's disputed at this point, but he was claimed to have said in 1899 that they should close down the U.S. Patent Office because everything that can be created has been invented. I think it's disputed because 3 years later, he's quoted as saying on his, when he was ending his tenure there at the Patent Office, he said, "I wish that I could start my life again right now because there's no telling the beauty of the marvels that are going to be created in this next lifetime." Because in that interval, the first voice was transmitted over radio waves. The photoelectric cell was developed. Not too long after, man would fly through the sky. Wilbur and Orville Wright. Incredible things were still to take place. But he thought that everything had been achieved. And how wrong he was. And sometimes I think we believe that everything has been achieved. God has done everything he will do. And how wrong we are. When we get into these places, this psalm is something that that helps me to consider, and I hope it will help you. Psalm 56, verses 3 and 4. "When I am afraid, I put my trust in you. In God, whose word I praise, in God I trust and am not afraid." When we get into situations of fear, what we need to remember is God's track record. God's done it. God's promises. God will do it. And his character. In this Gospel of Luke, we see Jesus as this compassionate, willing human being to care for those around him. And we see the God of the universe capable of rebuking wind and waves. Jesus is both able and willing. The character of our God is to be with us through all of it and to help us to the other side of the lake. Even when we don't see it, God is working. There's a story that Robin shared with me about this little girl praying at bedtime. And her father overhears her prayers. And she's praying the ABCs. And he waits until she's done, goes in. He says, "Hey, honey, were you praying the alphabet?" A little incredulously. She says, "Oh yeah, Dad, I didn't really know what to pray for. So I figured I could give God all the letters and he'd know what to do with them." From the mouths of babes, right? What theology? And we sit here and drone on. And sometimes I don't know what to say. Sometimes you're in those spaces when you don't know what to pray. And this little girl reminds me of Romans 8. And we're told that the Spirit helps us in our weakness. Even when we don't know what to pray, even when there's groans that are coming out of our body, the Spirit is able to translate that and bring it before God. Even when we don't know what to say or how to say it, the Spirit is translating those prayers to God. And even when we don't see it, God is working actively, consistently. Consider this man named George Mueller. Some of you may be familiar with his story, but he looks like a dude I want to hang out with. But George Mueller was a minister in the UK during the 1800s, I believe late 1800s. And he and his wife and those around him cared for over 10,000 orphans in their lifetime. Over 10,000 orphans were clothed, sheltered, fed, educated. And the kicker? Not once did he ask people for money. Not once did he solicit funds. He prayed. There's a story of him and the kids around the dinner table praying, giving thanks to God for food they didn't have. Upon the completion of their prayer, there was a knock at the door. The baker down the way had dropped off food enough for them and then some. And he actually, there's a book about him and his life that's beautiful and shares so many more stories like this. Not once did he ask for funds, and God provided. God was still working in the life of George Mueller, miraculously, and in the life of each one of those little boys and girls. Or perhaps Dr. Helen Rosevere, a missionary doctor in the 50s and 60s to the Congo. She was working at a mission hospital, and she tells this story. I'm going to read some of it to you in her words, but setting the stage here, there was a mother who had come to the hospital ready to give birth, very premature. The mother didn't survive. The baby needed an incubator. They didn't have any that were working. The mother left behind there this premature baby and a two-year-old daughter who was beside herself, understandably, weeping and wailing. They went and ran and tried to get a bottle, a warm water bottle, like a rubber water bottle they could use for this child. And in the process of filling it, it broke. So Dr. Rosevere tried to do the best they could, keep the baby near the fire, hold him close to your skin, do what you can. And then she says this: "The following noon, as I did most days, I went to have prayers with many of the orphanage children who chose to gather with me. I gave the youngsters various suggestions of things to pray about and told them about the tiny baby. I explained our problem about keeping the baby warm enough, mentioning the hot water bottle. The baby could so easily die if it got chilled. I also told them about the two-year-old sister, crying because her mother had died. During the prayer time, one 10-year-old girl, Ruth, prayed with the usual blunt consciousness of our African children. 'Please, God,' she prayed, 'send us a water bottle. It'll be no good tomorrow, God. The baby will be dead. So please send it this afternoon.' While I gasped inwardly at the audacity of the prayer, she added by way of corollary, 'And while you're about it, would you please send a dolly for the little girl so she'll know you really love her?' As often with children's prayers, I was put on the spot. Could I honestly say amen? I just did not believe that God could do this. Oh yes, I know that he can do everything. The Bible says so. But there are limits, aren't there? The only way God could answer this particular prayer would be by sending a parcel from the homeland." You can tell she's British. "I had been in Africa for almost 4 years at that time, and I had never, ever received a parcel from home. Anyway, if anyone did send a parcel, who would put in a hot water bottle? I lived on the equator." Halfway through the afternoon, while I was teaching in the nurses' training school, a message was sent that there was a car at my door. By the time that I reached home, the car had gone, but there, on the veranda, was a large 22-pound parcel. I felt tears pricking my eyes. I could not open the parcel alone, so I sent for the orphanage children. Together, we pulled off the string, carefully undoing each knot. We folded the paper, taking care not to tear it unduly. Excitement was mounting. Some 30 or 40 pairs of eyes were focused on the large cardboard box. From the top, I lifted out brightly colored knitted jerseys. Eyes sparkled as I gave them out. Then there were the knitted bandages for the leprosy patients, and the children began to look a little bored. Next came a box of mixed raisins and sultanas that would make a nice batch of buns for the weekend. As I put my hand again, I felt the, could it really be? I grasped and I pulled it out. Yes, a brand new rubber hot water bottle. I cried. I had not asked God to send it. I had not truly believed that he could. Ruth was in the front row of the children. She rushed forward, crying out, if God has sent the bottle, he must have sent the dolly too. Rummaging down to the bottom of the box, she pulled out the small, beautifully dressed dolly. Her eyes shone. She had never doubted. Looking up at me, she asked, can I go over with you, Mommy, and give this dolly to that little girl so she'll know that Jesus really loves her? That parcel had been on the way for 5 whole months, packed up by my former Sunday school class, whose leader had heard and obeyed God's prompting to send a hot water bottle even to the equator. One of the girls had put in a dolly for an African child 5 months earlier in an answer to the believing prayer of a 10-year-old to bring it that afternoon. The storms in our life really are dangerous. But God has the final say. In the 1800s, in the 1900s, today, the reality is the storm may or may not have been started by Jesus when he was asleep in the boat. I don't think Jesus started the storm, but Jesus had authority over the storm. And right now, I think sometimes we can feel fear around us. And the reality is faith isn't fearless. It's trusting even when you fear the most. And in that moment, these disciples are crying out when they see the water coming over the board. And they, unlike maybe like Dr. Rosevere, said, we're going to drown. Rather than praying like little Ruth, expectantly. How often do I encounter things that are difficult in my life and I respond like these disciples? And Jesus, when he asks them, where is your faith? I don't see Jesus condescending. I don't see Jesus scornful. I see him asking them where their focus is. Is your focus on the storm or on the one who has authority over it? And church, is your focus on the storm or on the one who has authority over it? It's pretty convicting to me because so often my focus is on the storm. And I don't turn to Jesus in faith. I yell out to Jesus in desperation. But the beauty is, even then, he didn't just get up and rebuke his followers. Jesus got up and rebuked the storm that was threatening his followers. And then he asks them where their focus is. And they were terrified. I think it's interesting. At first, they were afraid of the storm, and eventually they were afraid of this Jesus. They had corrected that which was disordered. A few things I want to ask us. Where is your faith today? Where is your focus and what is it on? We live in a time that is scary, and that's okay. One of the things I want us to remember is that fear is natural. When the disciples were afraid, in this text it says they were in great danger. Many of us in this room, you've seen the emails. You're reading the news. You've heard all the rants. And you're scared. You don't know what it's going to look like in 8 months or less. Where's your faith? Fear is natural. It's a valid response in our bodies when something feels wrong. And then what do we do with it? That's the question. Because the reality is, while fear is natural, what you don't need to forget, Jesus is in the boat with you. Jesus was in the same boat that the disciples were in that was threatening to harm them. Jesus is in the boat with you, with whatever you're facing. with the diagnosis and the divorce, with the difficulty at school and the difficulty at home, with the questions about your employment status. Because the reality is, you have so little control over when those storms start and how intense they are. You could do the best you can, and you could still lose that job. You could be doing the most important job in the world, and you could still lose it. You could be the most loving toward your spouse you could possibly be, and they could still choose to walk out. You could be the most kind and caring and compassionate to your children, and they could still reject you. In the midst of the storm, don't focus on the storm. Instead of turning to panic, turn to prayer. When times of panic arise, times of prayer need to follow. Fear is valid and is natural. Jesus is in the boat with you. And Jesus has authority over the storm. The storm doesn't get the final say. God does. So church, this morning, I don't know where you're at, but I hope you will choose prayer when panic arises. And I hope you will encourage each other to do the same. I hope you will encourage me. Many of you have seen me in panic. There's a little thing called Night to Shine that happened last week.
Right.
When panic arises, prayer should follow. Let's encourage each other in this. And maybe Jesus isn't in the boat with you yet. And you feel the water rising, you feel stuff coming, and you're curious and you want to follow this Jesus, you want to commit your life to him. You know you need him in the boat. If you have questions, if you want to talk more, please come find me. I'll be just right outside here. I'd love to talk more. One of our elders. We'll have people around with yellow lanyards on as well here in a moment. We're going to be singing a song. If there's anything that we could pray for with you for, please let us know. If you're curious about following this Jesus, please come see me. Jesus has authority over the storms in our lives. Let's remember that. We stand and sing.